TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Hello, welcome in. Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore, as we are in the middle of the off season, Dane.
We sure are. It's August.
August 1st. It is officially the NBA dead period. Probably could have said that last week. A minor move was made today is, well, I don't know if it's minor, but Patrick Patterson was bought out, and he's going to sign with the Clippers.
This was before your time. He was like a big-time Timberwolves fans.
Yeah,
really
I saw that on
him.
Twitter. I had never, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, that was the Taj summer.
Okay, so that would have been 3 summers ago, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because they clearly needed a power forward. It was like guys like him, like Paul Millsap was like the dream.
Sure, and he got some money.
He did. He got way outbid. And then there was guys like Jermichael Green, and Patrick Patterson were like the cult ones that people like really were like, oh, stretch big.
That's awesome.
And Patterson had
that looks like they made a good decision there.
I think so. They dodged a bullet there.
Anyways, they made a bunch of moves this offseason. None of them were necessarily major ones, but they made a lot of moves. I think that they did have a relatively good summer for the hand that they were dealt. Obviously, striking out on D'Angelo Russell hurts, but after that, I think that they pivoted to a pretty good plan B for their future. A lot of these guys might not necessarily be around for their future, but I think that this helps to set them up. So I do want to talk about our favorite moves that the Wolves made this past offseason. And I think we can start at the draft if we'd like. So
sure.
We won't talk about the hiring of Rosas. We won't talk about the hiring of Ryan Saunders because that's kind of been
like a long time ago.
It does. And we've talked about it in a ton. So we can start with the draft. And the one move that I really like was moving up for Jarrett Culver. And I think because the potential of him to potentially be a star, maybe, or at least be a very serviceable two-way guy, is certainly worth the risk of trading Dario Saric.
Sure. Where are you at with how much you think he plays this year right now?
I think Culver's going to start. I think that they're going to, and I think I know on this podcast we've talked about what we think their starting lineup's going to be. I don't remember if it was you or Manny I was with, but I think obviously Carl's going to start at the five. Jeff Teague's going to start at point guard. And then I think they're going to roll with Covington at the four, which they've talked about a bunch, maybe not just flat out saying it, but they've certainly hinted at it. Yeah. I know you've asked about it. And I think that Wiggins and Culver are going to play 2-3.
It's interesting. I mean, I obviously can't argue with you. I can't argue with what you think. But the interesting thing to me is you think it's going to be Culver. I think it's going to be Jake Layman. Okay. I saw John Krasinski and Britt put out like a thing on The Athletic where they estimated the whole rotation. And they have Okogie starting there, and it's like, I don't know. It seems very much to be a question mark. I wonder, honestly, in like back corridors of Saunders-Rosas conversation, is it actually a competition for that, like in training camp, or is it like, no, we're going to play, we're going to have Culver, be it he was our sixth overall pick, you do that? Or, I mean, I think there's ways to, you can like grab certain things they've said that you could be like, well,
and twist it a little bit.
Yeah, where you're like, well, they gave Layman 3 years. Rosas in Vegas, remember when he said he's like, Jake's going to be the one who makes our offense go?
Yeah.
That sounds like a starter.
It does.
I mean, but at the same time, you could do any of them. I don't really feel strongly, but I think it makes sense if you're going to go, you're going to be really undersized at the four, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not really undersized. That's a small ball four.
Correct.
So then if you go 2-3 with Wiggins and Layman are big there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think particularly Layman could help you. They're going to have to find a way to navigate when they're playing those two bigs, like big bigs.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, you want to keep a fast group out there because then you're kind of counteracting the slowness of big guys. But also just being as big as you can in other positions is probably the best way to go about it. And Josh and Jared are just a little bit smaller.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see what it's going to be when it shakes out.
I hope
out
we know, like, before
night one. I kind of hope we don't know. I kind of want to walk into Target Center,
right,
and, at, like, when the clock starts at 90 or whenever it starts, I just want to see numbers on the scoreboard. Like, those are the guys that are starting. Like,
Keita? What?
I don't want Ryan to tell us before the game. Like, I want someone to ask, so who's your starting five? And he's like, no, we haven't decided yet. Well, it's night one, and
So, okay.
And I also hope it's vastly different from starters in any preseason right. game.
So I was looking at, because that was a question I asked myself. I was like, well, with Jarrett, what do guys that are picked there normally do?
Yeah.
Do they normally start? How rare is it to be a sixth overall pick and then kind of just fall into a sixth, seventh, eighth man role?
That's a good question. Are you talking your first year, or career-wise? Because I think if he falls into a sixth, seventh, eighth man role career-wise,
No. That's not a win. Yeah. I'm talking about right away. So okay. I looked it up last year. Picks 5 through 9, Trey Young, Mo Bamba, Wendell Carter, Colin Sexton, Kevin Knox.
Okay, so Mo Bamba missed a lot of the year due to injury.
But he never started even when he was playing.
Okay.
So all those guys, either they, Knox and Sexton, were benched the first, 10, 20 games of the year.
And then...
Not benched, they came off the bench.
Yeah.
And then they started the rest of the way. Trey Young started the whole time, Wendell Carter started the whole time, and Bamba didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was largely a product of Vucevic and that he stunk.
I also think that the position that these teams are in are a little bit different too. Like Colin Sexton didn't start for that portion of the year in Cleveland, in large part because they were paying George Hill $18 million.
Yeah, I guess
that's part of it. Like yeah. you do have to, because I agree with you that maybe he doesn't start right away, and that should be fine. But you also have to look at the scenario. Each individual situation is a tad bit right. different. Because as soon as George Hill was gone, and actually I think George Hill got hurt mm-hmm. and then came back off the bench because they had given the starting right. job to Sexton, and then they shipped George Hill to Milwaukee, and the rest is history. Right. But that's how that started.
I looked at the year before, too, and that's pretty much how the 5 through 9 guys, and it was De'Aaron Fox, Jonathan Isaac, Lauri Markkanen, Frank Ntilikina, and Dennis Smith. And again, all of those guys, except for Ntilikina, who's kind of the Bamba of that group, who just was young, stunk, wasn't ready. So
still
he didn't start.
Still doesn't.
But the other guys, they either eventually started starting or did all the way from the beginning. So it will be kind of weird
mm-hmm.
if Jarrett Culver is not the starter for the whole, comes off the bench the whole year.
Yeah.
But I do think it's just in the nature of this, the vibe I'm getting is there's going to be a decent amount of guess and check when it comes to rotations.
With the position that the Wolves are in, I think that's okay.
Yeah.
You have a lot of things to figure out about who you have, what the future looks like, and you don't have anyone in terms of your new acquisitions other mm-hmm. than Jake Layman that are assuredly going to be around for the foreseeable future because right. everyone else is essentially on a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll come down to Culver's minutes will come down a lot to how much of a premium they're putting on shooting.
Yeah.
Everyone will reference, Culver only shot 30% from three last year at college. It's like, okay, one, that's a college stat.
Well, didn't Josh Okogie shoot 38% at Georgia Tech?
2 years in a row. 2 years running, 38, 38.
You can throw those numbers out the window. I don't care about your college numbers, and I don't think that translates. I think
Culver's
going
to be one of the better shooters.
It seems like you don't think that number translates either, obviously.
No, way. I mean, it could. I don't think it should be the assumption that he's going to come into the NBA and be, I mean, that would be well below average.
Yeah.
Like, to me, in watching him shoot, and the type of shooter he strikes me to be is he'll be totally fine in catch and shoot situations, maybe good.
Well, and I just said you can't quit college, but that's what he did his first year at Texas Tech, and he was better than his second year.
It shows some precedent there where, I mean, I don't think Culver's going to be a great shooter in the NBA, certainly not next season, but compare him to the other options there on the wing. Josh Okogie, below average shooter for sure. Travion Graham, below average shooter. Jake Layman, I would say, is below average shooter. Wiggins, I think he has a good shot that
he could
see.
Be good.
I could, yeah. I mean, I would say Wiggins is actually the best shooter of that group. Just from in an open gym setting, you're like, all right, let's go.
Like just no one guarding you, just letting it fly.
I could buy that. Like a shooter.
I could buy that. Yeah.
I mean, what screws Wiggins is the types of shots he takes.
Yes.
I don't think he's actually a bad in an open gym setting shooter. And
no, I think in an open gym setting, he's one of the most talented guys in the league.
Right, sure.
Like that's never been his problem. Mm-hmm. That's the thing about these summer workout videos that are published now because we have no other content this summer. Is that all
Shout
of these
out Swish culture?
Yeah, all of these guys look great, and they should. They're NBA players. When the other NBA players are not playing defense, they should be scoring all the time. Like they should have no issue.
Right. Right. So I guess what I'm saying is that if they go, wow, we're 20 games into this season, we're not getting up as many threes as we want, and we're not making as many as we can, then maybe you make an adjustment to add more shooting to the mix on the wing. I think would be getting Culver in a bigger role, and also using Shabazz Napier a little bit more. I think, yeah. I mean, he might be, he's not a great shooter either, but he's probably one of the best on this team outside of Cat and Covington.
Yeah, I'm curious how he's going to fit in positionally. And this is...
He's a point guard.
Well, this is the first time also that you and I have talked on a microphone after those guys were introduced and we got to talk to that group of five a little bit. So let's actually just pivot to that instead of trying to talk about all of the offseason moves. And we can touch on Culver more if we want. But let's just chat. Let's just chat, Dane. What were your main takeaways from that day? Because Napier was certainly one of mine. And the thing that stuck out to me, aside from, and this isn't necessarily a super on-the-court thing, but he talked about when he got to Portland. Mm-hmm. And it's also interesting the places that they're grabbing guys from in terms of culture. I think that that is a kind of a big deal for them. When he got to Portland, he didn't necessarily believe in himself as an NBA player, and they kind of turned him into that. And right. He's become a very serviceable guy when he certainly wasn't. And that's the thing that he said most that stuck out to me.
Yeah, I think the first time he brought it up was I asked him about playing alongside Lillard.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, Napier's small, you know, so you
that,
look
that
at
is
him.
Not a big backcourt regardless.
No, but that's what's interesting. To me, the reason I asked the question was because he played a bunch mm-hmm. with Lillard. He even played, they ran a good amount of three-man lineups with Lillard, McCollum, and Napier all on the floor at the same time. And, I mean, McCollum's the tallest of that group at like 6'2.5", 6'3". Like,
yeah, that is tiny.
But to their credit, they made that work. And I would say to Napier's credit, made that work. They also played Napier alongside D'Angelo Russell last year. And it's like, I don't know, if you can make that kind of come together, then you add more shooting to the mix. But the other side of it, and what I think is just really... The whole point guard position, and you're like, what's kind of going on here, is they only got two guys. Like, who? If you are gonna play Napier some alongside Teague, then what's your backup?
I think we're gonna see Andrew Wiggins play point guard a little bit.
You think there will be lineups with neither of Teague and Napier on the floor?
In small spurts, yes. Yeah. You can't run that out there for 20 minutes a game. But if it happens 2 to 3 minutes at a time, when you only have two point guards, that might happen at times. I'm not saying it's going to be something. It's not going to be a crutch for them. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be something we see a lot of. But I don't think it's going to be an automatic Teague checks in or Napier checks in, Teague checks out, and vice versa. I don't think that they're never going to share the floor. So in turn, I think you're going to have times where you see someone else having to play point guard, or you're going to have times where it's Napier and Wiggins in the backcourt, and Wiggins is the de facto point guard there.
Right. I could see that more.
But I think what I'm trying to say is I think Wiggins is your de facto third point guard right now. I'm not saying it's a good option, but that's the way I see it.
Maybe some people are thinking like, well, they got Ty Wallace, he's on a non-guaranteed contract.
I don't know if he'll be around, though.
Right. We don't even know if he'll be on the team. Yeah. And then, I mean, what happens if there is an injury to Teague or Napier?
Or you're looking at maybe Jalen Noel?
Yeah. So I guess of the options, and if you put Wiggins in a very static situation, I think he's fine to be able to feel like, okay, it's a pick and roll. We're doing a side pick and roll. It's pistol action. Very basic sort of I think he could handle that. And I mean, I've long been like, put Andrew in more pick and roll action.
You're not alone.
Just get him to force him to go downhill. And there's less thinking, there's less opportunity for him to just kind of chill standing upright.
Yeah.
If he has the ball, there's less opportunity
for him to relax.
Exactly.
I think is the best way to put that.
And once you're pushing him downhill, he's never going to get his back to the basket where he's going to fall into that habit of dribble, step back, 18 footer. I like the idea of using Wiggins as a lead ball handler. I like it more as a secondary pick and roll option on the floor, which is very different than a point guard. You know? So it's just as much as, you know, who's going to be starting. That's a big question for me, how they just function the entirety of the lead ball handler, how that works. And Brooklyn, I mean, Brooklyn used a bunch of different guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Napier being one of them, D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie. I think you'll see.
But they were better equipped for it. There's no question. I mean, they had an all-star point guard. They had Spencer Dinwiddie's a really good point guard. Caris LeVert was the best player on that team before he dislocated his ankle. Mm-hmm. So they were better equipped for it than the Wolves are.
Yeah, there's just not the depth. There's just not the depth in Minnesota. And what if you trade Teague at the deadline? I think at some point they're going to have value
at the deadline, because last year was a really strange year for him personally, mm-hmm. I think, with dealing with injuries that he, for the most part in his career, he's been a very healthy guy. He's not missed time. I think it was a weird year for him. It's a contract year. You know you're going to get the best version of him that's out there. Right. I'm curious if he's going to have value to a contender at the trade deadline.
Yeah, or at least like neutral value, where you could just say like,
give us a second round pick.
Yeah, like, and just we're going to let Culver play, like, or Wiggins.
Let the young guys play, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and then Jordan McLaughlin. Like, that's honestly, he's like kind of the third point guard right now.
Him or Jalen Noel, yeah. One of those two.
Noel, I got to watch more of and see more of, but he strikes me more as like Deion Waiters-y, you know, like a 1.5 sort of thing. Yeah. Again,
I mean, I can't say I've watched all of Jalen Noel yet either.
Yeah, I know.
I wouldn't expect.
That's why I wish we could have seen him in Vegas. Like, some.
Yeah. Because, I wish that quad wasn't bothering him.
Because it was like, people rip on Summer League. To me, in Summer League, you can figure out what people can't do.
Sure.
You know, like, and I remember, like, this kind of deep cut, but Jared Terrell, who was the two-way guy last year, they played him, like, the first couple games in Summer League as a point guard, and it was just not going well. And it's because he was never in college. He was like a two, or he was like a Deion Waiters-y guy. He was like a 1.5. And they go, okay, we're done. Like, you're not doing that anymore. And so then going into the whole year, we're like, okay, if Jared Terrell couldn't play point guard in Summer League, he's not going to play. He's not the third string point guard on this team this year. So I wish we would have seen more of that from both Culver and Noel, because then we could have learned what they can't do. But right now, I mean, that's a huge question mark for me. Him, and then to spin into another one of those five guys, Vonleh is another, like, I don't know what's happening there.
No, I don't know what Vonleh is going to be. He's a good defender, and that's a positive for a team that needs good defenders for the most part.
He's like a okay defender.
He'll be solid. I think he'll be solid defensively.
If he buys in and like it fits into the scheme. It's easy. I feel like there's, and I'm not saying this is you, but there's been kind of this narrative forming that like, oh, they added all good defenders. Like all those guys up there are good defenders. It's like, all right. So Vonleh, he struck
I wouldn't
up
say
well
they're at, good defenders. I would say they actively added guys that aren't huge minuses
that's
defensively.
True. I'll give you that. Yeah. Vonleh is not a huge minus defensively. And if for nothing else, when we were talking about before, the having the two bigs out there mm-hmm. situations, like if you're playing Memphis with Jaren Jackson and Jonas Valanciunas, like you're gonna have to play someone.
Yeah, you got to match up.
Otherwise, they'll just bang you in the post. And there's a lot of teams like that. I mean, the Lakers. Like, what do you do if you're the Wolves? The season opener is against the Lakers. Do you still just start Robert Covington and just be like, all right, Anthony Davis? They're starting Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, and LeBron.
I don't know that they're going to start DeMarcus Cousins. I'm curious. That's another team that I'm curious to see their starting lineup. I'm not sold that they're going to start DeMarcus Cousins, especially after last year and just his health being a question mark, especially at the beginning of the year. I think it might make sense for them to bring him off the bench and just start JaVale.
JaVale? Still, even that, though, JaVale's big, too.
No, yeah. But he's not going to bang with you.
That's true. That's true.
He's not going to – where Boogie will, JaVale's not going to be – that's not his game.
I mean, it's just – If it is a lineup of Cousins, Davis, and LeBron, what? How do physically the Wolves match up with any of those three guys?
That's a good question. Not well.
That's for me when I think about the things that weren't addressed this offseason, it's that you basically said Cat's our center who guards the other team's best big, mm-hmm. and that has not been the case.
No.
That wasn't last year.
It was the opposite of that last year.
Yeah, it was never. Cat, we're playing Jokic. Do not guard him, Cat, ever.
Cat essentially played the four last year.
Totally.
Like that's what he was.
Defensively, I mean, for sure. And then he's out on the perimeter on offense. So.
Carl played the four last year.
I
realized he was listed at the center for the All-NBA votes. He was a center. He was a four.
I remember asking 2 years ago at a shoot-around Nikola Vucevic about guarding Cat. Just mm-hmm. like, you know, simple question like that. He's like, well, no, I mean, I'm not going to be guarding Cat. He's a four. I'll be guarding Tosh. He's like, Aaron Gordon, Aaron will be on Cat because he'll be out on the perimeter. I'm like, oh, so you view Cat as the power forward. And he's like, yeah, Tosh is the one in the lane. That's who I'm going to guard. And I was like,
Oh, I'm curious how that'll change this year.
I was like, that's what I think too, but that's I always see the word a C next to cat on the thing, and when they announce the 7 foot center.
It's like, you're right, but hear me out.
Exactly. So, yeah, the bigs position is, how many minutes of, you know, call it 33 minutes a game that Covington's going to play is how many of those is he the second biggest player out there for you? And then, depending on where you slide on that on the gradient, is how much time Bell and Vonleh and Gorgui Dieng play. Like,
I don't think Gorgui's going to be in the rotation.
Okay. Do you think he should be in the rotation? Those are different questions.
No, I don't. I think I would rather see the other guys play. I would rather see Jordan Bell. I'd rather see Noah Vonleh. I would rather see those guys at that second big or that third big or whatever than Gorgui.
I think it's close. And
I'm not saying it's like a landslide, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you also got, not that you didn't see the Timberwolves before this. Like
this
that
is
was
my
so,
first. Like yeah. I didn't see
you.
Good
you got the worst of Gorgui for sure. And other people will be like, well, you know, even when Gorgui was starting alongside Cat, like he was in his way.
Yeah,
like on offense, that was like literally a thing. I remember like writing an article, like chopping up all these videos of times where Cat would drive and he would run into Gorgui, who was like didn't know how to navigate like being between the block and the dunker spot, and like it
was just in no man's land far too often.
Well, and, I mean, but think with Cat, think about how much space Cat takes up offensively on the
floor.
Large
guy.
It would be hard. It would be hard to be a quote unquote traditional big next to him because Cat both like takes up a lot of the floor vertically and horizontally.
Kind of makes what Taj did more impressive because he was never in his way,
and also Taj couldn't stretch out to the corners.
Exactly why that was more impressive, because that wasn't ever his game. It was his game for like five games. He shot corner threes, but other than that, it wasn't his game.
But I think if you shape your offense differently and you don't ask Gorgui to live on the block or the dunker spot, and instead you have him out above the break even as like a stretch big, like a Ryan Anderson-y type of power forward, then he's not in the way. And do I know that Gorgui can shoot those threes like effectively? I don't know. I mean, he has always been, even in his bad year, been a good shooter from 18 feet.
Yeah.
And can you get it so he steps back that way? I just think it's worth messing around with and exploring, because the other options are Jordan Bell and Noah Vonleh, who are not like what do Noah Vonleh and Jordan Bell do that's so much better than Gorgui? Like, what is the skill set?
I don't know that it'll be so much better, but I think it'll be different. I think it fits the scheme better.
Yeah.
I think that Jordan Bell will probably at least stay out of Carl's way. He's more athletic than Gorgui is.
Faster, for sure.
Definitely faster. I think that he can't play that Taj role, because Taj is obviously built so much differently than him. I think Noah Vonleh could maybe play a little bit of the Taj. They're still built differently, where Vonleh is bigger, but I think that they could play somewhat similar roles. Yeah. I think Jordan Bell's role will be something that we haven't seen next to Carl.
It's just it's an interesting like micro example of, does this team prioritize talent or fit?
Yeah,
because
that's Gorgui, a good question.
Because Gorgui is the best player of those three. I mean, in my opinion, maybe some people disagree with it, but I think that he can do more things than those guys can at a competent level.
Well, because I think he can shoot at the highest level of those three.
And he's certainly the best backline defender of those three. And I'll hear people out that Jordan Bell has much more defensive versatility and those sort of things.
I think he has more versatility, but at that particular spot you bring up, it's Gorgui.
Right. And so it's just, but Gorgui does not fit that, what they've been saying of, we want to play really fast, we want to get out in transition. That's just not his body type. That's not the game he's played for whatever 7 years he's been in the league or whatever it is. So it's there's a bunch of little questions around there up and down the roster of, are we prioritizing playing the five best players, or are we prioritizing the five players that fit this basketball style identity that we want to play with?
So I think it makes sense to play the players that fit the identity, because the identity that you're trying to build is not going to be these guys forever, right? Mm-hmm. These guys are going to change at some point. it's going to be a team that looks somewhat different next year and the year after that. But if you can ingrain this style and that culture, it gives you a blueprint for what you want. Whereas if you're just trying to play the most talented guys, you're going to look different in so many ways year to year. And I don't think that that's something that they want. I think that they want to start
exactly what everything you just said is exactly which, if unfiltered Gerson Rosas was sitting right here, that's what he would say.
I think that you want to build an identity, and that identity is probably not including Gorgui Jang.
Yeah. It, you know what's an ironic part about it is not for next season, 2019-20, but 2020-21. Isn't Gorgui Jang more likely to be on the Timberwolves than Noah Vonleh or Jordan Bell?
If Noah Vonleh and Jordan Bell play really well, then yeah. But, although I think that his contract becomes kind of movable next summer. I think that it, certainly more movable or than it was this summer. Yeah, like, or wait, stretchable.
You know, like you just, we're done.
Well, when are they done with Cole Aldridge's stretch? That's got to be somewhat soon,
so it's
right?
For 3 years. Last year was the first one. Oh, so, no, so he has, it's this year and another year. I mean, that's only like 700.
Yeah, that's a $685,000 stretch.
Yes,
it's not too expensive there.
He's playing in the Twin Cities Pro-Am.
I saw that. That's
it's gonna
awesome.
Be kind of loaded this year. I actually haven't gone this.
Cool. I've never been to it.
It's cool. I mean, obviously, today's
my first summer here.
It's the championship today. But Napier played in it. Vonleh played in it.
I saw Tyus was in it.
Tyus is kind of like the
guy
host.
That puts it together. Yeah,
Monte Morris played in it. Yeah, like that's it's just kind of guys who like come through. Rashad Vaughn was in the league. I mean, he's a Minnesota guy.
He's just signed somewhere too, overseas. I think.
Yeah, overseas, like Egoteb or something. Yeah, it's in Bosnia.
I'm not sure. Yeah, but I know he signed somewhere.
That's a tangent, but yeah, I don't know. The bigs for me, how the backup bigs function and how the backup point guard lead ball handler dynamic functions is interesting, and I don't think we got answers from that at the press conference.
Well, let me ask you this. I want to ask you, do you think they should be going talents or identity? What do you think personally is the right option there?
I mean, so if you go talent, you maybe boost your expected value of wins from 35 to 37 or something like that. So yeah, I would, it would be hard for me to make an argument like on paper of like, there's so much logic in this because they're going to win more. But at the same time, there's like a weird psychic effect of not playing your best players.
Sure.
It's just like, if you're doing that from the beginning, if all those guys know in practice that Gorgui is the second best big on the team and you're not playing him, it just kind of feels like you're tanking from the start.
Yeah.
And maybe he's not. Like, I know I'm saying this here, but if it
well,
if it
even
is clear,
even if he is, I don't think it's like, it's not a huge gap, I don't think.
Right.
And it's not as if we're talking about, oh, this uber-talented Gorgui Jang can't get on the floor.
Totally.
Like,
I'm not saying
he might. He might be the second best, but it's not like he's that good still.
I would like to have them, I'd like to have them try and see, you know, you never have played in a, you've played for Sam Mitchell and Tom Thibodeau. Like, you've never had a chance. We've never even seen you play a modern, fast, upscale type of game. Yes, your body kind of suggests you can't do it, but maybe we're going to try you as a stretch big and then be a good rim defender on defense. Like, I think it's worth trying. I think it would be disappointing to me if they went full on identity in every situation over talent. I think there's a fusion to kind of like navigate there. And if, you know, somebody's hot, like Jordan Bell's having a good run of 10 games, and like, yeah.
So if Gorgui's in the rotation, then who's out of the rotation? Because there's only so many spots, so many minutes, and that's the other side of that question.
So it seems like everyone thinks Jordan Bell is now going to play a lot.
I mean, I think he'll play. I think he should be in the rotation.
I feel like that whole narrative really picked up after the press conference day, and a lot of people were like, it wasn't my sense in being there when people were, when the guys were talking, when Ryan and Rosas and Bell were talking, but then as, reading some of us afterwards, people had the like, oh, Jordan Bell's going to like be the guy.
Yeah.
He's going to be the guy. And so what I'm saying is my assumption before that day was Jordan Bell would be an out of the rotation guy. I mean, he signed for a 1 year minimum contract. He's nothing about that suggests he's a long-term, nothing about other than his age suggests he could even possibly be a long-term piece to this team. And then Vonleh, I know that they tried to give him a multi-year deal that would imply that they have a little bit more interest in him. So I kind of like put him up in the hierarchy. And then just Gorgui I put up there because I think he's better than those
guys. And in part, you're paying him. Like, that's part of the reason with starting Culver. Like, you are invested in him. You're already invested in Gorgie. And that's getting back to that discussion. That's part of the reason why I think they should start Culver, because they're investing him. And if it's not Culver, Lehman, because of all the other guys that they acquired, he's the only one that they really have invested in, because he's going to be around for 3 years.
Right. And it's just going to come down to how much does Covington play at the four?
Yeah.
Because Cat's going to play a ton at the five. Maybe Gorgie's role at a minimum, I think, should be he's in the rotation if Cat's in foul trouble.
Okay.
Which if last year is any sort of signal, then that's going to happen a lot.
Yeah. Where do we go from here? Because I like Lehman. He's okay. Let me ask you this then. Of the four guys that are so throw Jake Lehman out. Of the other four guys that were sitting on stage last week or 2 weeks ago now, who's most likely to play the 2020-2021 season in Minnesota? So Vonleh, Jordan Bell, Napier, Graham.
It's hard to say. I mean, they're all 1 year deals. So
that's why it's a great question.
And they're like, it's Jordan Bell.
You think so?
I don't know. I mean, there's a signal to me that he was interested in being here because he signed for as little as he did for as
I'm
short as he could.
I'm surprised no one wanted to take a bet on him and give him a little more money. At least, I mean, maybe someone did. Maybe he wanted to come here. I don't know. But I'm surprised
you would
that,
think that's what happened. You would think he wanted to be here. The contract suggests that he wants to be here.
I'm kind of surprised that that's...
And that they want him. Yeah. Like, so I guess I would say that it seems really unlikely that any of them will. Just because they're like laying the groundwork for an identity, but this is clearly not the group that is going to be. So little of this group is going to be a part of the next good Timberwolves team.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's hard to see it. It's hard to see any of those guys being like a big part of the future. I think maybe one or two of them could be back just because we don't know what's going to go on next summer. I would probably say maybe Napier, just because I don't know what's going to walk through that door at point guard. Yeah. And you're Jeff Teague, if I had to bet, Jeff Teague's not on the team in 2021. Right. And at that point, if you're losing both of them, you have zero point guards.
So maybe the way to think about it is, of the four of them, which most emulates the style of play that they want to play with? And then if they are like that, if they're a good fit for the Rosa Saunders ideology, then they're the most likely to return. I would say Napier is that. Napier or Bell?
I think it's certainly those two, because Bell is versatile. If he could shoot, he'd be perfect for that. Like, if he could shoot better from the outside, maybe we'll see him start to do that. He literally
has never made a three.
He's how many has he attempted in his career? And of the attempts, how many were heaves? Yes, that's always the question that I love to watch.
Isn't it? I mean, another thing with the group is just that. You say you want to play fast, and we tend to connect playing fast with modern, which then connects to three-point shooting.
Yes.
Yet all of these guys they brought in are not, like we were saying before, are not shooters. So it has me just wondering if they're searching for a different type of efficiency in the game outside of three-point shooting.
Let me ask you this, because what Houston started to do and what Golden State did before them was stuff that we had never seen before, right? Mm-hmm. I think that especially with Houston, we're just so heavy iso ball with Golden State, where they kind of rewrote the record books with three-pointers. Do you think we're going to see an offense unlike we've ever really seen? Because we haven't seen a player quite like Carl that's the center of the offense that can do everything he can do at the level he can do it. I don't know what it would necessarily look like, but we could see an offense that we've never seen before in the NBA.
I mean, what did he say? We're going to question the norm.
Yeah, that has been repeated many times by Gerson Rosas in the 3 months he's lived in Minneapolis.
The way I see it is a fusion of Denver, Golden State, and Houston, in the sense that Cat is your Harden. He is the fulcrum of your offense.
Yeah.
Yet you obviously can't use him in the capacity that you use Harden.
He's not going to dribble the clock out and go.
So you use him in the capacity that the Nuggets used Jokic, which is, you know, at the nail extended, out there reading the floor, determining what side is the strong side, what side is the weak side, and distributing from that area, or shooting, creating himself. And then I think the third part of it, the Golden State part of it, is that I think they're going to really put a priority on finding efficiency in the mid-range.
Yeah.
Which is how Golden State did that, was first was with Draymond Green, just on the short roll. And you're every possession, we are moving downhill. We're getting somebody to catch the ball, moving towards the basket, ready to distribute from there. I think they're going to find ways to use cutters and players that obviously they're not Draymond Green level, but can be in that area and operate out of the short roll. Or like Kevin Durant was the next evolution of that, is they had a guy who could...
Pretty good evolution.
Who could live in the mid-range and do everything he wanted to in the mid-range. He could shoot from there efficiently, and he could get downhill. So I think they're going to want to have Kat as the fulcrum, and then they're going to want to have the surrounding pieces be players who can catch the ball in the mid-range, not necessarily shoot from there, but that be their catch spot, and then move towards the basket, either looking for people in the corner or guys slipping pin down screens for alley-oop. I mean, that was as much of the Golden State identity as three-point, or at least the second step of the Golden State identity was, let's get downhill.
It just wasn't the sexy thing to talk about.
No, but think about when you watch them. How many times, particularly in the playoffs, how many times was it like, oh my God, that was so easy that it's just another lob for Andre Iguodala at the rim, or Bogut, or whoever it was. Yeah. And I think that element of the Golden State offense's efficiency is so underrated. And what is the most efficient part of the game? It's not three-point shooting.
It's layups.
It's layups. It's getting to the rim. It's getting to the foul line. And so I think the nerdy front office that is in Minnesota will be looking for the way to make this as efficient as possible. And because it's not going to be efficient in shooting because they don't have good shooters outside of Covington and Kat, to me it screams we're trying to find an efficiency within the three-point arc.
Yeah.
And Kat's going to be a big part of that. And he's going to need to get really good at reading the floor squared up. And what I think he got better at was he got better at reading the floor out of post-up situations.
Where do you think he is on that? Where do you think his – how much better does he need to be?
There's a huge gap between Kat's distributing basketball IQ and what Draymond and Jokic are.
Granted, those are the two best.
I know, but I'm just saying – to really make that work, you got to kind of have a genius there.
Yeah.
But what Kat can say is, I don't need to be a genius there. I need to be good because I'm so much better than at everything else offensively than Jokic and Draymond. Because you know what I can do? If you don't come out on me, I'm hitting this 40% of the time in your face.
If it's open, I would venture more than 40.
45, yeah. And if you come out at me, if you're blitzing me, I'm going to take you off the dribble and I'm going to get all the way to the rim. So he doesn't have to be Draymond and Jokic, but there is a big gap there. How much of that can he eat up with his just pure offensive talent? If that's able to be a smaller gap and he's able to be an even better shooter, an even better scorer off the bounce, like, that is a good fulcrum.
Yeah, certainly is. Anything else you want to get to?
No, I want it to be the offseason.
I think things are going to be quiet for a little bit.
I know. I'm
I think, although I think that the NBA schedule will probably be out like 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, I looked it up. It was August 10th that came out last year.
August. So it's August 1st now. Next 10 days, we should have a schedule.
No, only one home preseason game, and it's against like Maccabi Tel Aviv or something.
Dane, I'm fine with that. There is, I will venture to say, I love my job. I love covering basketball. I love the NBA.
We don't need to cover a lot of preseason games.
I hate the NBA preseason.
Hey, but a lot of these questions we're asking, the preseason will begin to answer.
Somewhat, yes.
Somewhat, but we can watch those on TV.
We can, yes. I'm glad that there's only one preseason game at Target Center. I might be in the minority, but I'm very glad.
I just would have liked it to be against an NBA team. Is that too much to ask?
No, I'm with you there. I would have liked it to be an NBA team, but I'm glad that it's only one. Yeah. If you really want, you can drive to Milwaukee.
Do that. That's the final game of the... What was the bar we went to in Milwaukee? We'll go back there.
I don't remember. We went to a couple. Well, I went to a couple. I think you met me at like second or third. But I don't remember the name of the bar. It was a fun time, though. Fun night. But this has been Raised by Wolves. That's Dane Moore. I'm Danny Cunningham. Find us on the all-new Score North mobile app or on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your listening stuff, scorenorth.com. We'll be back next week. Dane's going to be out of town. I'll be on with Manny Hill both on Monday and either Wednesday or Thursday, so stay tuned for that. And like you said, the NBA schedule coming out soon. I'm sure we will have plenty of breakdown there. Maybe we'll play the 82-game schedule game when that happens. We'll have to see. That's a long schedule game, buddy, but it's fun. It is. So we'll talk to you next time.